you very much. Okay, our last case this morning, I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce this correctly, but I'm sure the parties will correct me, will be Place versus Mao.
Hi.
Hello, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Good morning. I kind of can't even believe this case is here.
Well, before you believe it, how much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
And would you also identify yourself?
I apologize. William Budd again. Attorney for the appellant, Mr. Ploss.
Yes.
Gerard Ploss. And let's reserve 3 minutes.
All right.
Thank you. In this modern day and age of pedestrians versus cars, the law has been so clear for so many years that pedestrians are protected when they're in a crosswalk area or an unmarked crosswalk area. That was one of the most challenging things about the case originally when I took it, was there weren't painted stripes, but they were at this all occurred at
We have a problem. You fail to follow most of the rules on appeal. We don't have much factual record here, so we need you to point us to the record before us to establish what facts there are, period.
We'll
accept they didn't dispute that someone was struck by a vehicle, but where in the roadway, where the vehicle was relative to the lanes, where?
That's undisputed. The vehicle was a bus. It was a two-lane road, and the striking happened right after the edge of the bus. And that's all undisputed. There's no...
Yeah, but that's not dispositive.
How do we know where the other vehicle, the defendant's vehicle, was with respect to the center line as it went by the bus? What in the record that we have here tells us the answer to that question?
It is undisputed that the vehicle had crossed the center line with its driver's left tire.
That's undisputed. I read the respondent's brief again this morning to see if that fact was admitted in the brief. It's not.
That wasn't challenged ever by any party in the case.
How do we know that?
Well, because you have a briefing on it.
Well, we look to the testimony to find out what facts were and were not disputed at trial.
Right.
See, here's the problem. Was the driver's vehicle one tire over the center line, or was the vehicle entirely in the opposite lane, driving the opposite direction in the opposite lane of traffic?
I think under the law it doesn't matter.
There's no
distinction in the law.
How far back from the intersection was the driver's vehicle when it was over the line?
How far back from the intersection? The width of a crosswalk.
More than 100 feet?
He was hit in the crosswalk.
And over the center line?
Yes. Undisputed.
Undisputed that the collision between the car and the driver was in the middle of the crosswalk.
With the
driver over in the other lane of travel.
The driver was over the lane of travel that was testified to by the driver, and no one has disputed that. It's not even in any briefing saying otherwise.
But the testimony isn't in front of us.
Because there's no need to go into and find that piece of testimony because it's never been challenged by anyone ever. That wasn't even an issue.
I mean, have you encountered any other appellate case in which instructional error and the trial court's discretion to reject instructions that aren't supported by the evidence. Have you ever encountered a case that was decided on the basis of a record that contained none of the testimony?
Absolutely.
And could you cite those cases, please?
You don't need to have...
Name a case.
I'm unaware of any case that rejects that theory.
Are you aware of any that embraces it, considering the fact that the rules of appellate procedure make it the duty of the appellant to supply a suitable record?
I've got to tell you that almost no reported cases say whether or not the facts that they are deciding upon were in the record or not. Almost no appellate decision says, in the record, it said this. They just say, here's the description.
Take it from me. There are a lot that do look at the facts and the record and cite to them. And so I'm just asking you, and apparently the answer is no. You are not aware of a case that says it's okay to supply just a certain section of colloquy between the court and the attorneys in order to make a case about instructional error. You
nor
are not
I
aware of any case.
Nor am I aware of a case,
case
the other way.
It says the opposite, but you aren't aware of any case that says it's necessary.
It is not necessary, given that we have a rule of the road instruction and no challenge that the vehicle was over the center line. Well, that's not even an issue.
You're the appellant. You're the one that's got to make the case.
Don't you have to show the facts in the record supporting the need for the instruction? Isn't that what the law requires?
The rules.
Not if it's not challenged.
Where does it say that?
But they did challenge. I mean, the court didn't give it below. The other side was objecting to the giving of the instruction. Therefore, whether or not the jury instruction was legally required for you was put at issue, and whether it's legally required turns on the facts.
Your Honors are focusing on only one of, like, four statutes that were rejected.
Well, we probably are focusing on the one we care about.
Whether he went over the center line?
Yes.
Oh, well, I'd like to address that, because the most focus of these statutes is whether or not he passed a vehicle within 100 feet of the intersection and passed a vehicle that was deboarding people, so he was aware. There's so much of the law on that.
But the standard varies whether the bus is stopped for debussing or whether it's simply stopped to yield to a pedestrian or stopped at a traffic signal. It's different whether you have multi lanes going in the direction in which the passing occurs.
Well, first of all, it isn't different on is it, there isn't a distinction regarding whether the deboarding is going on. There's only one case that tries to say that, and it doesn't, and it's relying on the wrong case. And so we should go through that analysis because the case underlying cases weren't one of them wasn't even a bus case. The other one, in passing, talked about our particular statute, but that wasn't even the issue of that case. And the so-called Panitz case that relies on those and says this is what those courts said, that got changed by Daly, by the Supreme Court.
Could I ask you this? Did the witnesses at the case, which I recognize are not in the record, but based on your own knowledge, can you recall, were there any accident reconstructionists that testified?
There was one requested, and the judge denied it. At trial.
Is that undisputed?
That he did not, that he rejected an accident reconstruction expert?
Yeah. And who it was? Was it your witness or somebody
else's?
Yes,
I brought a witness, and the judge ruled that because he didn't do a report, I was supposed to have done a whole nother summary of the report, and I was going to bring that issue up on appeal, but I don't think it matters.
So the judge found basically a discovery violation. He found the discovery rules obliged you to provide more information than you had.
Well, the judge ruled that the defendant's doctor, who didn't do a report and was only named, was allowed in, but he ruled that my expert, whose address and resume and all that was given, and who didn't do a report, was not allowed in.
All right, you have your 3 minutes for rebuttal.
And there, I was going to appeal it, but I don't think it's the main focus of this case.
You have used your opening time. You will have 3 minutes on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Marilee Erickson. I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Mr. Mao. We're here to ask the Court to reject the appellant's appeal, either to dismiss it or reject it wholesale for the deficiencies in the record and the deficiencies in compliance with the rules of appeal. Alternatively, we'd ask the Court to affirm because the errors that are raised, if the Court chooses to reach them, are not errors of law and they are not prejudicial errors. The court has, in questioning of appellants...
You had a good trial judge below. I mean, it's an interesting case. Your brief was striking in what it didn't address. the facts probably aren't much in dispute. But if, you know, I mean, what can we draw from the record here about where the victim was when the vehicle struck him and where the vehicle was when it struck the pedestrian?
Judge Applewhite, I don't think there is much in the record with regard to where the point of impact was. I have looked.
But was there a dispute at the trial about where the vehicle was and where the victim was when the accident occurred?
Not being the trial counsel and not having seen the transcript, I don't know the answer to that question.
Do you think that counsel is mistaken then when he says that the facts are undisputed?
I think, yes, counsel is. And with regard to the question of point of impact, there's nothing that I've seen in the record that has been provided. And just so the court knows, and I don't know if the court has looked at the, there was correspondence between counsel and I disputing whether the record was adequate. And as a strategic matter, as a respondent, I know I have the opportunity to provide the record, but on this instance, after pressing it several times with appellant, we chose not to incur those costs of putting forward the record.
You didn't move to strike his brief, did you?
We did not move to strike his brief. We moved to dismiss, or we moved to, in our brief, asking the court not to consider the appeal for the lack of the record based on existing case law, based on the court rules, based on
Certainly would have helped us get to the substance where we could have either booted the appeal or gotten a brief that was helpful.
I will take that into consideration for the next time this opportunity arises.
I mean, just in terms of justice for the victims. I mean, obviously we're here, we're intrigued with the merits of the case and whether or not an injustice has been done. And frankly, it isn't. We're not in a good position because he hasn't done the job he should have done. And on the other hand, we're getting a gotcha on the technical rules, which isn't very helpful on to a victim in the facts of this case.
I understand, Your Honor. And if I could get back to the question of Judge Becker's question and to some as best I can, address Judge Applewhite's question about is there a dispute. There are disputes in the record, even in the record that we have, the limited record that has been presented on appeal. Again, I don't have any reference with regard to where the pedestrian was when the vehicle hit them. But if you look at the transcript dated December 14, 2010, the question of was Mr. Mao's vehicle over the center line, which is a focus of this court's questions, there is a colloquy between Judge Downing and between Mr. Buttigan, and at line 3, starting at line 3, page 15 of the 12-14-2010 VRP. The court says, second of all, the right front corner of Mr. Mao's vehicle was not across the center line. It could have been in the lane of travel. So I don't see the causal connection between this infraction, if there was an infraction along these lines, and the occurrence. Mr. Buttigan's response is, Your Honor, his vehicle was over the cross line.
So is Judge Downing saying there the part of the vehicle that the evidence shows struck the pedestrian wasn't across the center line, so there wasn't a reason to give the instruction requested by plaintiff about passing the vehicle within 100 feet of the intersection?
I think that's a fair interpretation of what the judge is saying, that there was not any passing in. There were two statutory challenges or provisions that the appellant wanted to include in the instructions. They had to do with passing, and they had to do with being too close to the intersection and passing on the left.
Would you read that again, what you said about the right front tire?
Yes, it says, second of all, the right front corner of Mr. Mao's vehicle was not across the center line. It would have been in the lane of travel.
So the vehicle...
Not across the center line? Is that what you said?
That's what the transcript says. Okay.
So we have part of the vehicle in the opposing lane of travel, but not all of it.
Well, I don't know that I'd go that far, because there's center line said here, and then there's cross line, which Mr. Buttigan says. And I just point that out, that there is a dispute about disputed interpretation of the evidence. We don't know what the actual evidence was that was presented to the jury. What I'd like to back up on and point out, though, that the instructions as given did allow the plaintiff to argue his case to the jury and the appellant to argue his case to the jury.
They don't in this scenario, and that is if it's a two-lane road and there's no curb lane for the bus, so the bus is stopped for debussing in the lane of travel, the vehicle then went across the center line into an opposing lane of travel within 100 feet, there is a different statutory presumption that passing should not have occurred, that would have implicated liability in the accident, which would not have been implicated if he was passing in a second lane going in the same direction. And so he doesn't get to argue his theory of the case if, in fact, he was illegally passing in proximity of the intersection.
Well, I think the facts of Judge Applewick, again, based on the minimal record that the appellant has presented, from that same line that I've quoted earlier, Judge Downing says, it is a bus that is stopped at a bus stop. That doesn't fully answer the question, is the bus stop a bus stop where he pulls off the side of the road? But under the instructions as given, the appellant was able to argue basically standards of care, reasonable care, exercise reasonable care.
The pedestrian had the ability to presume that no car would be coming from that direction since the only path available for a car to come was occupied by a stopped bus.
Well, if I understand your question correctly, Judge Leach, the rule of law is if the pedestrian only has, the pedestrian does have an obligation to exercise reasonable care.
And he does, and he looks the other three directions, but he doesn't look to his left because he can see a bus stopped in the only lane of travel that's available for vehicles coming from that direction. So he assumes there's nobody behind the bus because anybody behind the bus would be operating his vehicle unlawfully. And he proceeds into the crosswalk and is hit. And maybe he doesn't exercise ordinary care, but he wants to argue comparative fault because that other guy shouldn't have been where he was either. How can he make that argument under these instructions?
Well, I don't know that he's entitled to that instruction because my understanding of the facts, based on the minimal record we have, is that the plaintiff was disembarking from the bus himself. So the rule of law with regard to the case law that talks about a bus stopping, disembarking passengers.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about the bus. What I'm concerned about is a pedestrian. I don't care if he got off the bus, if he came from some other direction. He's trying to decide, should I cross at the crosswalk here now or not? And he knows that nobody should be coming from this direction because the bus is stopped in the only available lane of travel, and it's illegal to pass at this intersection by going into the opposing lane. So he doesn't look carefully around the bus because he assumes that the traffic coming from that direction is following the law. He looks in all of the other directions, and as soon as he gets past the bus, wham, he gets hit. He can't make the argument to the jury that that driver is operating illegally, contrary to the rules of the road, unless he gets the instruction Judge Downing refused to give.
Well, I think the scenario that you've put forward, Judge Leach, ignores the fact that the evidence in the record, and this was disputed evidence, again, I'm relying on a question and actually a comment that Mr. Buttigan made, that Mr. Plus A departed from the curb and quickly bolted. So it's a darting out case. It's not a case in which...
So okay. So he looks three directions and runs fast. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think the case law is that he still has the duty to exercise reasonable care and that...
But what he has in addition, once he's crossed the lanes where the bus is that he's departing from, is a right to rely on, a statutory right to rely on the assumption that cars aren't going the wrong way in the other lane when he gets out there, that they're following the rules of the road. That's the distinction.
You have used your time.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
is no question that the entire car was not over the center line, because that was known that his right front tire was, pointed out by the judge, was inside the right-hand lane. It's a two-lane road, undisputed by anyone. The right side...
How do you know it's a two-lane road?
Well, because it is, and no one has ever alleged it's anything other than a two-lane road. It always was a two-lane road, and even Judge Downing, that was his point, that center line meant something to him. He said, look, the right-hand tire, as they're going, and they're going...
So are you claiming we can take judicial notice of the number of lanes in this road?
Well, no one has told you otherwise, and no, it's ridiculous to say that ever was a disputed issue.
Okay.
Why is it ridiculous?
Because of the pictures of a week-long trial.
But no, we don't have.
Everyone them. Knows. Well, because you don't need that, is what I'm saying. You don't need to buy a transcript to find out that
okay.
It's a two-lane road.
We completely disagree with you on that. So the question is, can you point to the record that what we have to establish where the victim was then when he was struck? If the vehicle wasn't entirely in the opposing lane of travel, is there anything in on the record before us that establishes the victim clearly was in the opposing lane of travel?
The width of a car, 6 foot. So that means he was hit, and he was hit by the car. No question, and I don't need to buy a transcript to say he was hit by a car.
If he was hit by the right front corner while he was in the first lane of travel, it may make a significant difference as opposed to whether he was hit by the left front bumper well into the opposing lane.
I beg to differ, Your Honor.
Okay.
We protect our crosswalk people who are walking through those. And it doesn't matter where that car is in relation to the center line. As long as that car is violating the law.
Counsel, before you get outraged like that, I suggest you go back and read the rules of appellate procedure and measure your compliance with them. Because the problems we're having with this case aren't with our understanding of the law. They are with a deliberate and hard to explain failure to comply with the rules of appellate procedure on multiple bases, and you should not be angry with this court because of your own failure to follow the rules.
I'm not angry at this court. That's not what I was saying. And it has nothing to do with whether we had a transcript that said where the center line was. That's not my point. My point is this, that the law protects pedestrians in that crosswalk. Whether that car is half divided by the cross by that lane, whether that car just has the right tire barely in the right hand lane, whether that car that hit him is fully in the other lane, it doesn't matter where that car is located. That is not a factual issue that weighs on the law at all. The law says you can't pass a vehicle. You can't within 100 feet. You can't do that. And it doesn't matter whether the right-hand tire is on the right-hand side. And I do apologize to the court that we didn't buy an entire transcript to do that undisputed issue. That was never disputed, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And it's not a matter of anger.
You have used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes our docket for this morning. Thank you very much.